Philadelphia Union, San Jose Earthquake, DC United, Los Angeles Galaxy,
Beach Pass,
Colorado Rapids, Vancouver Whitecaps, Orlando City SC, Montreal Impact, NYCFC, Seattle Sounders.
Pitch Pass, your all-access credential to the people that matter in MLS. Here's your host, Greg Roach.
I would sing that It's the Most Wonderful Time of the Year song, but you don't want to hear me sing. You want to hear from some of the people, the movers and shakers of MLS, and that is what Pitch Pass is all about. Thank you so much for downloading this episode of the show, and I invite you to go to pitchpass.com to download past episodes for the show. We're not an X's and O's podcast. It's all about getting to know and talking with the people who matter in MLS. Our two guests today are people who matter in MLS. But they fly under the radar, kind of quietly going about their business. But both have played an important role in getting their teams to this point in MLS Cup playoffs. And we're going to talk to two Pitch Pass debutants today. Later on, center back for the Vancouver Whitecaps, Tim Parker, will join us. But first, the man between the pipes on the trendy pick for dark horse favorite for MLS Cup this year, Montreal Impact, Evan Bush, kicks off the show. Evan, how are you? Welcome to the show.
Good. Doing well.
Let's go back in time a little bit since this is our first time chatting. I see, based on your resume, that you did some time at a club called Crystal Palace Baltimore. Is that true?
Yeah, I did. It was one season.
And your thoughts on Charm City itself?
The city itself was great. I actually lived in Towson, just a bit outside of the city. But yeah, I love the vibe. I've always liked the East Coast mentality and the things that come with that. So I really enjoyed the city, and it's easy to bounce around to other places from Baltimore. So I enjoyed my time there.
Now, you as an Ohio guy, you probably could appreciate the blue collar mentality of Baltimore.
Oh yeah, for sure. Cleveland being in the Rust Belt, I think that's what everyone thinks when they think about Cleveland, Cincinnati, Cleveland, Pittsburgh, Detroit, cities like that. So Baltimore's a lot like that as well, and it was pretty seamless going from Cleveland to Baltimore.
Were you old enough to go and party in the city at all?
Yeah, I was probably 23 at that time.
Okay, so all right. So you did some time in Canton, Federal Hill area.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Of course, for sure. Yeah. And looking you up, I had no idea, because we always hear about the field players from those great Akron teams of the mid 2000s. You were the keeper on those teams.
I was. I was kind of right at the start of that really good run of players. So I came in when Ken Mola was coach, and then Caleb Porter came in my sophomore year. So I spent 3 years with Caleb, and then that's about the time the program really took off.
What was it about Caleb that, well, I guess first enabled him to get and attract so much talent to Akron?
I think his personality in general, it's very, you want to play for him. He's very intense and wanting to, he's got an identity to who he is and what he wants to build. And as soon as he got, it was Anthony Ampipatakwan. As soon as, that was kind of his first, big recruit from the national team. And then once he got him, I think guys just kind of followed Ampi. So I think it was, you get one, and then his buddies come, and then you can start really building on top of that.
My favorite team is Ajax, and my favorite all-time team is the 94 undefeated Champions League Ajax team. And I can still go through that starting 11 and even a couple of guys on that bench, because from there, those 18 to 22-year-olds all went on to play on huge powerhouse clubs. Could we do the same thing about maybe the Akron club of your senior year?
Yeah, my senior year, I think, was an outstanding team. And then even the following season when I was gone, that's when they brought in the Derek Ballantyne and Chad Barson.
Yep.
They got to, Perry Kitchen, I think, came in that following year. So, but my senior year, I think Darlington Nagbe was on the team, Teal Bunbury was on the team, and neither of those guys were even in the starting lineup.
Jeez.
So it shows the firepower that we had on offense that year.
And let's shift gears to you. because a lot of those Akron guys immediately get drafted, immediately go on to MLS clubs and start making their mark for a lot of them in their rookie year. You took a more circuitous path to MLS. What happened after Akron from the time you left Akron to now where you are with Montreal?
Well, I think there's two things that, for reasons why it took a little longer to get to where I am. And I think the first one is that as a goalkeeper, you don't see goalkeepers really come out of college and make an immediate impact. It's not very often. I think Stephen Fry is one of the only guys in the last, 7-8 years. Even Andre Blake last year, he didn't really get many games until, the end of this year. And the other thing is, you talk about how good the Akron teams were, and I think that actually was a detriment to me because, a lot of people looked at how good we were, and I was only seeing maybe 1, 2, 3 shots a game. So my abilities didn't really show until I got out of Akron. I set a lot of records and won a lot of awards and all those things at Akron, but that was a byproduct of what my team was as far as, that was the perception at least. So it was a bit frustrating, trying to break that perception. It took a while longer, but it took kind of an interesting road, going through the second division with a couple teams.
Mm-hmm.
I ended up landing here, and now I'm in a position where I thought I'd be all along.
Something that really stuck with me in a conversation I had with Clint Irwin was, and he mentioned it, and I'm sure you know this is true, that there are so many positions available if you are an outfield player. Meanwhile, there are only so many starting goalkeeper jobs. Going from MLS down to NASL and down to USL, which kind of limits your opportunities. When you take when you decide, okay, MLS has decided that they, for whatever reason, don't want or need me in the league right now, I have to go to a lower division and make my way back up. How much fear, how much frustration, how much kind of anxiety is going into, okay, well, if I go to USL, am I going to be able to get back up to MLS?
At the time, it was a little bit different of a landscape. This was, 7 years ago now? So it was more or less my decision, actually, to not sign with a couple of different MLS clubs. I had a couple of different options to sign with MLS teams, and it wasn't really in my best interest to just sit around and be a number three goalkeeper or just a training goalkeeper. It didn't really entice me very much, so I made the decision kind of on my own to drop down a division and get games because I figured, what's the point of, being a soccer player if you're not going to be playing games anyway?
Yeah.
So, I decided to do that, and I kind of used it as a springboard to bypass just the training time in MLS, where I figured after a few years I'd, have enough games and, I could jump into an MLS side and at the very worst be a number two goalkeeper and fight for a number one position after, a year or so. And ultimately, I got back with an MLS club, and the first year or two with Montreal, as far as MLS went, I know that the guys in the management positions were very happy with my progression and where I was, and I think that they wanted to see me play more games, but I think that with the coaching changes that we had in Montreal in the first couple of years, it always was a disadvantage to me where I kind of proved my worth to a coach by, mid-season or the end of the season. And then that guy was gone the following season, so I was kind of back to square one because my resume in MLS wasn't as good as the guys that were in front of me the previous year. So there's a lot of, just kind of fighting my way back in that position as opposed to really being scared about if I was going to be able to get back to MLS or not.
So you actually had a little more frustration once Montreal made it to the MLS portion of their existence than you did working your way up to that position.
Yeah, exactly. There's always been an obstacle at some point. And when I signed with Montreal, I knew that I was signing on with the NASL team as the number two goalkeeper.
Yeah.
But I also knew that, watching guys throughout MLS, I knew that if I had a year to prove myself with Montreal, that I was going to be able to make their team for the following season in MLS. So ultimately that happened. And then the first year in MLS, when they brought Jesse Marsh in, I don't think he really gave the benefit of the doubt to the guys that had been with the NASL team. So he kind of pushed me back down the depth chart behind a guy that was actually starting over the previous year. So that was kind of frustrating. But, you know, it's always been my mentality to, you know, just continue to push on and control the things that you can control. And if you do that, I think things will work out in the end, and ultimately they have.
You mentioned a different landscape when you came out of college. It is different now, especially with a lot of the teams having USL partners. If you could advise a young keeper today who was maybe in your situation 6 years ago, is it now a better environment to sign an MLS as a third keeper and then maybe be the starting keeper for their USL affiliate?
Yeah, 100%. You know, I didn't even, when I said the landscape had changed, I wasn't even really talking about the USL stuff, but I mean, that for sure is a benefit, because when I signed, it was with an NASL team, which there was no affiliate with an MLS club. Mm-hmm. Now that there's affiliates, that obviously helps the situation. What I was talking about was actually more the financial situation. It was an off season where there was CBA negotiations going on, and prior to them coming to a new deal, I think the minimum in the league was like, I think it was still at that point like either 12,000 or 20,000, one of those.
So 18.5 sticks in my head for some reason.
Yeah, somewhere in that neighborhood. So it wasn't. That was another reason where I didn't really. I'm not going to sign for that just to say, yeah, I'm on an MLS roster. I didn't really care that much to say that at that point. You know, I didn't really, you know, I wasn't very interested in living in a city like Seattle, which was one of the teams that I was with in the preseason. I wasn't interested in living in Seattle, making, you know, $18,000 a year, when I could have just essentially stayed home, which I did in Cleveland, and played for a second division team and still don't make a lot of money with that team for sure, but you know, it's at least home, and there's other opportunities to, you know, coach and do certain things to make money on the side. So that was ultimately the decision.
Cost of living's a little high in Seattle. It's just that's a news flash. I'm breaking you some news here. It's a little high to live in Seattle.
Yeah, a little bit higher than Cleveland, Ohio.
So now that you are in Montreal, and I'm talking to you from Washington, D.C., I actually had an event with my radio station not too long ago at the Embassy of Canada, where they brought in some poutine for an event that we had. So, you know, I've had my poutine recently, my poutine fix. Usually I do have to go to Canada to get it. You being so blessed to live in Montreal right now, your go-to poutine spot in Montreal is?
Ooh, to be honest, I'm not a poutine guy. You know, there's actually one food truck in Montreal, and it's, I think it's Pied de Cochon is the name of it, and it's actually a restaurant as well. It's kind of in the plateau area, and they do a foie gras poutine, which was outstanding, but I'm not a guy that goes and, you know, seeks out poutine. It's not really not really my thing.
Well, the health factors are probably a little bit. They cause you to shy away from poutine, I would imagine, in season.
Oh, a little bit, but, you know, I'd rather have ketchup with my French fries than
gravy.
That's
true. That's very true. Spoken like a true American.
Yeah.
Evan, you dropped a little French on me right there. I was taken aback because I don't speak French. How is your French coming along?
That was about the extent of
it. Okay. All right. Fantastic. The great thing about Montreal, though, is you are, and this is a fact that I've heard many times, outside of Paris, it's the largest French-speaking city in the world, which is kind of blows you away. And so it's very cosmopolitan. It feels very European. But when you walk into stores, they greet you in French, and as soon as you say hello back, they immediately downshift into English for you. So you do get a little bit of a foreign experience, but not overwhelming and scary.
Yeah. My first few years, we lived on the east side of town, and just this year, we moved out to the west side of town, and the west side of town is known to be more Anglophone, and, you know, everything is in English. So that's been actually a little bit more helpful for my wife, and I have two young kids now, so it's easier for her to kind of get around and do things, you know, the everyday things, grocery store, mall, stuff like that, that you don't necessarily want to be bothered or hassled with, you know, going through the translation and all that stuff. So it's been a good move for us out to the west side.
You mentioned young children. Are you going to have them learn French as they mature?
Well, our oldest one is 2 right now, so...
They're just trying to master English at this point.
Yeah, she doesn't really speak anything at this point. I mean, she's just getting going. So, you know, I think that it'd be beneficial for them to speak French or any multiple languages for that matter. You know, I'm kind of kicking myself that I haven't taken the time to learn more French myself. But, you know, I think any multiple languages is beneficial to anybody.
Do you have a better appreciation for maybe some of the, say, Latino players who come into MLS and have to learn a new language as somebody who is in MLS but kind of immersed in a different culture where the English is not the first language?
Yeah, I think that's a fair statement. I think the difference is that a lot of the Latino guys that come into MLS do it, you know, on their own accord where mm-hmm. – you know, they pick out the city that they want to go in. They're coming from out of the country. So it's not as if they're getting drafted or traded to, you know, a team that all of a sudden it's only English. Where Montreal is kind of in a tough spot for a lot of American guys where if you get drafted here from an American college or if you get traded for, it's the one team that, you know, there's a real big cultural difference as opposed to all the other teams. Mm-hmm. So. That kind of throws a curveball at some guys that aren't expecting to have to go through that cultural shock. So it's been a, you know, kind of a negative in the past, but, you know, this year with the likes of Didier Drogba signing, due to that, I think it's shown that it can also be a positive.
It's been a really fascinating season for you and Montreal Impact. It's almost been a tale of two different competitions where you guys were so backloaded in your MLS regular season schedule because of what happened in CONCACAF Champions League. Was it beneficial for you guys to have those high-intensity matches that early in the season as you went into the second part of the season where you then had to catch up on the matches that you had in hand and gain those points as you came through the regular season?
Yeah, I think so. I think the experience from those matches helped for sure. I think it hurt us in the start of the season with, you know, I think we got one or two points in our first 5 games. So from that standpoint, it put us in a hole. And we only got that many points because, you know, we were traveling, you know, to Central America or Mexico. Guys were tired, and you know, we had injuries, and that wouldn't have happened if we weren't in Champions League. But you know, the experience that we got out of that, and being able to go into any, you know, environment and know that, you know, it's not going to be nearly as tough as it was in Costa Rica when we were there, or Azteca Stadium when mm-hmm. we were there, that's definitely helped us.
And it feels like you guys have been in a playoff mentality almost from the point that Drogba came, and not just because he was here, but because you had to make up these points and actually pocket the points of the games that you had in hand. How has that helped you as you've actually gone into the playoffs proper in the last week?
Yeah, we definitely have been in playoff mode. I think it showed against the 2 games we played against Toronto, the season finale and then the first round in the playoffs. And then even against Columbus, I don't think we were extremely sharp. I think that we're a little mentally and physically tired from the 2 games against Toronto. But, you know, I think we found a way to win that game just because of the experience that we gained. And we knew that we didn't need to be, you know, physically or mentally at our best, but we needed to find a way to get a win. And, you know, ultimately we did that, and we're going into next weekend in a pretty good position.
You know, we've heard a lot about what a good teammate or locker room presence Didier Drogba is. We saw the video of him with the academy players. Is there things that he has been able to impart in you, even though you're a keeper, to help you mature in your position?
You know, I think he just brings a confidence to the whole group. For me, I mean, he's not going to tell me tactically or technically, you know, how to play the position. And I think if he tried to do that, I'd probably laugh because even though he's done everything at the club level, it's not a goalkeeper. And
well, he hasn't kept a clean sheet at the club level, Evan. So you've got that over him.
Yeah, there you go.
He hasn't done everything at the club level.
yeah. But he's just brought an excitement and a confidence to the team. And you know, I think there was a game in Colorado where we needed to get points out of the game, and 3 points wasn't necessarily crucial, but it went and helped us a long way in getting that. And I made a save at the end of the game that helped us get the 3 points, and he was the first one to come running down at the end of the game and embrace me and
nice.
Show his passion for the game and how much it meant to him. So I think little gestures like that have helped not only myself but other guys on the team as well.
You guys did most of the job in leg one, and I say most, the away goal that Columbus was able to score, probably not ideal for you guys, but you did get the win as you head to Columbus for the second leg. What's the mentality this week in training? Is it just, hey, we keep a clean sheet, we move on?
I think if you take that mentality, then you run the risk of just sitting in and taking blows the whole game.
True.
I think with the way our team's been built and the way we had success in Champions League was we were able to get the first goal in many of the situations, and then teams had to open up against us. And at that point, we have good players that can hit you on the counter, and they're very good in space running at guys. So that's the hope for going into Sunday's game against the Crew. We're at an advantage already. They need to come at us a little bit, and we know that the way they play, they're already, a bit susceptible in certain places when they come at us. So we're going to hope to take advantage of those areas.
I say keep a clean sheet and job done. I say that as somebody who has no concept about away goals because it's just very, very difficult. Do you understand the whole concept of away goals, or does somebody have to yell to the sideline if, hey, they need two, or hey, we need one? Do you know the actual mathematics behind it as it happens?
Yeah, 100%.
Oh, geez, Evan, you're so good, man. I love that.
Yeah, well, the first two rounds of the Champions League, or the quarterfinal and the semifinal, we advanced on away goals.
So you're very well-versed, yes.
Yeah, no, we have a good understanding. We're actually called, there's a lot of jokes about how we hadn't actually won any of the series. We just advanced on away goals, but got us in the Champions League final, so we're happy with that.
You know, I noticed after Drogba's fantastic assist on Higuain's goal, you didn't go over and kind of get in his ear on that. What do you do at that point? If as a defender, I feel like you would have said, hey, let's make sure we clear it the other way. After the match, do you say, Didier, thanks for the help, but next time, leave those headers to other people?
No, I think, a thing that's made us good on defending set pieces in the past 2 months is his ability to take care of areas in the box. And I know that if he could have it back, then he'd want to head it the other way. But I think ultimately it was a miscommunication. The guys behind him, there was two guys behind him that could have headed it out. And then also you have to look at the guy that was just free in the box where Higuain was. There should have been someone tracking him as well. So I was told once that on any goal, there's typically seven mistakes that are made. So if you look at any goal, I think that you can find quite a few mistakes.
The disciplinary committee has rendered their verdicts. There'll be no suspensions for any player for the next round of the of MLS playoffs. So we can ask you this question now. If Kai Kamara grabs your leg like Steve Clark had his leg grabbed, what's in Evan Bush's reaction to that sort of ridiculousness in the middle of a match?
I think if he has Didier, he'd say it was a bit ridiculous himself. But I don't think that warrants a red card by any means, and I wouldn't expect anybody to get a red card for that. I think a yellow card is the right call, and it wasn't malicious. It wasn't violent by any means.
No. But it was definitely. Looking at the game, you see on Steve Clark's face the reaction I think anybody would have, which is just basically WTF, huh? What?
Oh, of course. And if that was me getting my leg grabbed, I probably would have had the same reaction. I think Steve handled it very well, where he didn't kick out at him or he didn't retaliate or anything like that. Because in that moment, maybe Steve gets a red card and. Maybe Didier gets something else as well for provoking it. But, I think that it was just kind of a silly thing, foolish thing that happened at the moment. And I wouldn't plan on seeing that anymore.
You guys are a sexy pick for MLS Cup now that all things are equal as we made it to the playoffs. Is there any more specialness for you heading to Columbus, Ohio, for this next round, for this next leg of the playoffs to move on to the next round of MLS Cup playoffs?
To be honest, it's more of a pain in the butt because I have people texting me like every hour asking for tickets. So, from that standpoint, it's kind of a pain, but it's enjoyable. I don't, 5 years ago, I don't think I would have said I would have been in this position. And, me and Steve Clark, we played against each other in college. We played against each other even maybe a little bit before that. He's a Michigan guy. I'm an Ohio guy. We had a lot of tournaments and stuff like that where we crossed paths. And walking out of the first game, he said, not bad for a couple mid-major guys Midwest. So, you know, when you think about it in that regard, you know, you can't help but, you know, embrace where we are and, you know, how excited both of us are to be here.
How many tickets did you leave, and how much negotiating did you have to do with the rest of the guys in the team to get their tickets?
I'm still working on it.
Okay.
I wanted to have this all sorted out by, like, Monday or Tuesday, but I'm trying to get 20 tickets, and I know that's not even going to be close to the amount of tickets that I'm going to need, but you know, I'm hoping 20, and then I'll tell my parents just to deal with it and sort it out amongst themselves who gets what, because I don't really want to deal with it.
It's got to be annoying, though, when you go, hey, I don't have any more tickets, and they go, dude, you're a keeper in the league in this match. You should be able to get 100 tickets. And you're like, it's not that easy, man. There's a system.
Yeah, well, I don't think Columbus wants a bunch of Montreal fans.
That's true. That's also a situation.
Yeah, so they're not just throwing free tickets our way to hand out. So
it's a fair point. So I'll expect, let's say, somewhere under 50, between 25 and 50 Montreal Impact jerseys, but guys and gals with suspiciously non-Canadian accents in those uniforms, in those jerseys.
Yeah, you're going to see a lot of Montreal Impact fans coming out of Ohio license plates on Sunday.
Well, enjoy it, Evan, and congratulations on the success thus far this season, and best of luck on Sunday against Crew. Thank you for hanging with us. We appreciate it.
All right, thanks a lot.
That's Evan Bush on Pitch Pass, at Pitch Pass, by the way, if you want to follow us on Twitter. It is debut week here on Pitch Pass. Two players we have never spoken with. Evan Bush was one. Our next guest is another. He's been a revelation in the center of defense for Vancouver Whitecaps. It's Tim Parker joins us now. Tim, it really does feel like you've come out of nowhere.
Thank you.
It's good to come from somewhere, but you did. But it felt like you came out of nowhere because, you know, I went back. I'm on the East Coast in Washington, D.C., so, you know, I don't see a ton of Whitecap matches, but then I start looking at the box scores, and I'm like, wait, Tim Parker starts, like, every game now.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, I do. I do, Roach. You should know that. you started with the Whitecaps, too. So, and we just had Evan Bush on, and he was talking about his transition from coming up from the lower divisions into MLS and how it's different now as opposed to then. You came up the new way, which was drafted by the Whitecaps, but able to be loaned out to Whitecaps too. How did that help your adjustment to the professional ranks?
It helped a lot. I was fortunate enough to kind of get drafted by the Whitecaps, and when I was drafted, I kind of knew that for me to, in order to give me a chance to play with the first team, that I was going to have to get games and experience as a professional. And through the USL team, I was able to do that.
Yeah, and I don't know, and you have no, obviously, experience with this, but I don't know in the old reserve league how much of a worthwhile experience you would have gotten in that at that level.
Right. I mean, like I said, It was one of those things where the USL League now, associated with the MLS teams and even the ones that aren't associated with the MLS teams, kind of give a lot of the college guys a chance. They give college guys a chance in order to adapt to professional life and then continue to pursue their careers as soccer players.
Now, walk me through how the process goes. You're drafted 13th overall by the Whitecaps. Do they tell you immediately, hey, look, it's going to be competition for places in the first team, but we are launching our USL team this year. We'd like you to start there and move forward?
No, they didn't tell me that right away. But from the way I felt getting drafted by them and when I met them at the combine, that I knew that for me, obviously, I wanted to play in games, so I wanted to continue to grow as a player, and I knew that in order to play, I wanted to get games and earn experience, so that would help me, obviously, more with the first team.
I'm not as familiar with teams that have a full USL team. As a DC United fan, I know the Richmond Kicker situation where they send players down there. How is it, as far as training is concerned, when you're with Whitecaps 2 and relating to the first team? Do you all practice together? Do you just practice with Whitecaps too, but Carl is there? How does that work?
There was different times. So there were times where I trained with just the Whitecaps, the first team, and I would go down to the Whitecaps too for a game. And there were also times where I was able to train with the Whitecaps too, and obviously Carl would be at those trainings as well watching us.
Now, I know you're a New York or Long Island guy, so I'm assuming that you're familiar with how baseball works as far as their minor league system. Is it similar in MLS? Do you get the call, so to speak, and coach brings you in and goes, hey, we're putting you in the first team, or you're making the bench, or we're starting you? How does that work when you move from the USL team to the first team?
Like I said, like for me, it kind of went both ways. So I would go from training with the first team to USL games. So once I kind of started to do well with the first team and started training well and performing well in the USL games, I realized that there was always the chance or an opportunity for me to play with the first team. And when I finally first started to make 18s and stuff like that, then, I mean, I was kind of just sitting there waiting my turn for my chance to play.
Side note, we just brought up the fact that you're from Long Island. On my fantasy football team this year, I drafted Ryan Tannehill, but I picked up Eli Manning along the way. I had benched this past week because Tannehill did so well the week before. That was a bad move. I'm realizing that. My question to you is, do I need to be starting Eli for the rest of the season? Wait, first, are you a Giants fan? You are, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I am a Giants fan.
And so I'm a bit of a knucklehead for not starting him this past week when he literally went crazy. But is he consistent enough to go all year is my question to you, Tim Parker.
Yeah, I think so. I think the best thing about Eli is in this new offense is that if he's, like, playing well and the team's playing well, as long as he's not getting hit every other play, then he's going to be performing as well as he can.
All right, well,
and that's what we got to see last week.
Let me ask you in this way. Is he on your fantasy team?
He's on one of my fantasy teams, and he is one of my starters.
Okay, and I'm assuming the other ones, you just didn't get to him in time. He got drafted before you, right?
The other one, I didn't get to him in time, but I was able to get Odell Beckham. So that was all right.
Okay, so you've got the connection on all of your teams.
Yeah.
When you got drafted by Vancouver, I know you're a soccer fan, but I'm sure Vancouver was probably one of the teams you knew the least about in MLS. What was that experience like, and what were your initial thoughts on Vancouver? I've been to the town, so I know now you'd love it, but it had to be a little bit intimidating to be going literally to the furthest place you could possibly be going from where you're coming from.
Yeah, and like you just said, like those are kind of some of the thoughts that went through my mind. Like, I never have been to Canada before I moved out here. I knew that Vancouver was the farthest team away from where I lived in New York. And I didn't really get the opportunity to watch a lot of West Coast soccer just because I lived on the East Coast. So usually most of the games I watched were local games.
I feel a little better now about not having seen you play a lot, because you just kind of confirmed it's a little hard on the East Coast to watch the West Coast games all the time.
It's true. And I mean, especially because for me, I didn't know much about, it's not that I didn't know much about the MLS, but most of the guys that I knew that played in the MLS played on the East Coast.
Yes.
For example, one of the guys I went to college with, Connor Lade, played for the Red Bull.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I mean, I would watch most of his games and kind of get my MLS experiences that way.
Yeah, and you know, even if you have MLS Live and you're up on a Saturday night watching matches, there are like three or four West Coast matches to choose from. It's difficult sometimes. And I would imagine for you, you were just excited to be drafted and heading into the league. I would imagine the people who kind of were a little more crushed than you were your friends and family, because in their mind it's like, well, now we're used to driving to see him to play. Now we've got to fly across the continent to see him play.
Yeah, I think it was a little bit of a change for my parents and my friends, because I was so lucky to go to college about 30, 45 minutes away from my house. So, but at the same time, I think it was kind of, I was spoiled in that fact. So the fact that I was able to move away from home, obviously, and grow on my own, yep. and obviously just get, I think kind of getting out of New York was really good for me. And I really do enjoy Vancouver, and I've had some visitors out here, and they've loved it out here. So, I mean, it's definitely a mix and match of both good and bad.
I'm really glad you're in the league. I've spoken with Jeff Laurentowicz a few times on the show. Dax McCarty is a great friend of Pitch Pass. We needed more gingers in the league. So I feel like that's the number one reason why I'm glad you are excelling thus far.
Yeah, yes, absolutely. Ginger Union.
How is the how's the playoff beard coming in?
It's slowly but surely. I mean, I ended up, I'm doing Movember instead of the playoff beard because I thought that would work out a little bit better.
You know, it's funny you bring that up because I'm doing Movember as well, and I was like, all right, well, I understand why he's not doing it because he's got to do the playoff beard, but now I'm filled with joy to now tune in and see you rocking a stash because you are rocking a stash currently, correct?
Currently, but I'm not going to lie, I don't have massive amounts of facial hair, so
okay.
Mine will take a while to grow in.
All right, so we need a long MLS Cup playoff run for the Whitecaps to really enjoy the awesomeness that is the Parker mustache.
Yes, absolutely.
Who is anybody else on the team doing Movember, or are we doing playoff beards because it's Canadian team?
I don't know. I didn't really ask around. I asked a couple of guys if they were going to do it. Some of them didn't really jump into it, but I don't know if anyone actually had a plan going on.
The awkward thing for me as far as Movember is concerned is when, first of all, you kind of are goofing around with it and having fun with it, and then you look over and there's a guy in the room with a mustache, like not from Movember, and you're like, oh, I'm sorry, I'm not joking with about you, I'm just my Movember mustache.
right, and it's kind of the same situation when you do kind of, like, if you ever did No Shave November,
yes.
There's guys that have had beards growing for the entire season.
Yes. And you're like, no, it's just, I'm not goofing on you, I'm just goofing on my, and then it's a whole thing. And then the other one thing is, and I think you'll realize this as we get deeper into November, when people just assume that this is the look that you always rock, so they don't ask, and then you feel the need to over-explain, like, hey, don't think that I always have a mustache. I don't. This is why I have it. And then you start thinking, maybe people think I'm the guy who has the mustache.
Right.
You'll,
right. I think also the look that you kind of get from people if you're like walking around and they don't really know
yes.
what's the point about it, and you just kind of are walking around with, like, for me, I won't have a full mustache until probably the end of November, so I'll be walking around with this half-built mustache.
Yeah, that you'll feel the need to explain to, like, the person checking you out of the grocery store, even though they don't care. You just want them to know that you are not a true mustache guy. It's just a thing for the month.
Yes.
Tim, I haven't realized, and I was looking at some videos of you on the Whitecaps website, you're pretty quick, man. For a tall guy, you've got some speed. Where does that speed come from?
I was born with it. Yeah. it's a funny story because my dad grew up playing football, but my dad was always a guy that, he was a running back, so he would always be able to get through the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
But there was always stories about how he would break tackles going through the line of scrimmage, but then the easiest part was catching up to him and tackling him from the back. So, I mean, for me, I obviously didn't get my speed from him, but I've gotten a lot of other qualities from him.
When did you realize that you were quick? And I would imagine at the youth level, it must have been difficult to stay at center back when you'd have coaches going, this guy's really fast, I need to put him outside, at least as an outside back, let alone maybe even a winger.
Yeah, when I was younger and when I was playing like club soccer and stuff, I didn't start playing center back until I was probably a freshman in high school. I didn't really, a lot of my coaches and stuff had me playing all different positions to make sure that I could kind of just take the most of my youth career and learn the most. And for me, I finally started playing center back when I moved on to a new club and we got this new coach. And he was like, I'm going to put you at center back. and it kind of stuck from there.
Because of your height?
I think it was just because he knew I was kind of like a leader when I was younger.
Got it.
So he knew that for me, the best position for me would be to be put in center back.
How much do you lord it over the offensive players that in 20-meter, 30-meter bursts, you are the fastest Whitecap on the team?
I joke around with Kakuta Mane all the time.
That's exactly who I had in my head. It's like, if I'm Mane, I'm like, all right, I'm blowing by this guy, and then meanwhile you're crushing me in all of these timed trials that we're doing, and you're a center back.
Yeah, I joked around with it with Kakuta Mane all the time, just because I gave him some stuff, just because of the FIFA rankings, he was ranked faster, and I was like, Kakuta, you know I'm still faster than you, right?
You know those are wrong, right? I mean, we could do a real-life race right now, put it on YouTube, and then we can see about the adjusted scores.
But, yeah, I joke around with him about it a lot.
It seems like you guys, and I've followed, at least from the outside, the Whitecaps for a while, because I've always enjoyed the style of play that they have. It seems like you guys are a close-knit bunch of guys. It always felt like in the past that the I don't want to say the maturity level, but the experience to close out games, to close out seasons hasn't been there. And obviously, you can't speak on the past, but what have you noticed about this team that may feel like this is a team that could be primed for a nice run in the playoffs?
Yeah. You know, I think about it. I mean, I think I've said this to a lot of people, and a lot of people always ask the question about how close-knit we are.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those things that kind of hit me by surprise as well. Like, you really, like, walking in into my freshman or my rookie year, I didn't think that everyone was going to be as friendly and as awesome as they are. And everyone really cares about the person next to them and wants them to do well, because they know that if they want you to do well, then the team will do well. And I think that's one of the best things about this team and this club, is that we have that kind of mentality that if everyone's pushing one another, then the more we push one another, the more the team will excel.
And I'm thinking specifically, especially on that note, the comments that Ka have made about you, the comments that you've made about him, as far as how he's mentored you is concerned, and I imagine Wasson has done the same. And these are guys, this is your competition for places, and these are guys who are your biggest champions, and that's got to feel really, really good.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, from the day I walked in, I mean, when I met Ka and even Kendall, I mean, I learned a lot from them. And I mean, I've had multiple conversations with them about playing-wise, off the field, on the field, all kind of different situations.
Ka has actually been one of the people who has pointed out, hey, this guy for national team. And I've got to think for you, I'm not saying you're coming from humble beginnings, but kind of under the radar as far as you've been. Talk about national team is kind of like, whoa, wow, this is crazy, but not outside the realm of possibilities. How exciting is that to at least even be mentioned in the conversation as far as the national team setup?
I mean, it's awesome for Ka to see me in that kind of a way. And like I said, for me, I mean, I'm just going to continue to put my head down and work. And the better I do with the Whitecaps and the more established I can be with the Whitecaps as a center back and get as many games and as much playing time as I can, I hope that the national team is obviously a goal that I would like to reach at some point in my career.
No goals at Providence Park, but didn't give up any goals either. It was a fantastic goalless draw match to watch. Did you guys leave there, and is your attitude this week as you get ready for the return leg in Vancouver, was it a job-done situation, or did you feel like you left something in Portland?
I think it would have been nice if we would have found a goal, but I think obviously when we left Portland and coming home and now looking forward to the home match on Sunday, I mean, we have one goal in mind, and that's just to win. It's to not let in any goals and score goals and win this game.
Since you're a New York guy, I'll ask you a question. As I said earlier, I'm in D.C. I'm assuming that you followed the Red Bulls, if not were a fan of the Red Bulls as you were growing up. Who do you like in the second leg of that match?
I think I'll take Red Bull to win that match.
Now, are you saying that? Are you saying that from an analytical point of view, or are you saying that from a from the heart point of view?
To be fair, I was never really much of an MLS fan growing up.
Okay.
So, although I did go to Red Bull games, I never actually rooted for them over any other team. But I think the form Red Bull's in, and I mean, I have a couple of friends on the Red Bull team, so mm-hmm. I think that it would be good for them to push on.
So let me ask you, I mean, you're 22. It feels to me as if you're the perfect prototype for the MLS, for the league, as far as the league has kind of been in existence basically your whole known life. What were you a fan of? And when you started playing soccer, what did you gravitate to kind of watch it and feel your passion started becoming flamed for the sport?
Yeah, I mean, I always watched soccer growing up. I was more of I watched a lot of EPL.
Yep.
I did watch some MLS, but like I said, it was so much easier for me to watch the EPL because it was on in Saturday morning.
Yep.
Whereas if I wanted to wake up, or if I wanted to watch MLS, I had to kind of adjust my schedule, like I said, to watch West Coast games and stuff.
Who was your EPL club? Or who is?
Tottenham.
Still?
Yeah.
Why you gotta laugh when you say it? There's no shame in that.
No. I mean, they've been through some tough times, but I'm still a fan.
Is it kind of surreal to think to yourself, okay, I grew up as a kid watching Spurs and kind of thinking that was like a fantasy realm, but now you're a professional soccer player yourself and not too far away from, you know, daydreaming kind of reality of saying maybe one day I can play in EPL, maybe one day I can play for Tottenham. Is that a surreal thing to think about?
I think a little bit right now. I think it's a little bit too surreal for me to think about that right now just because I know I have so much more to do in order to achieve those next kind of steps in my life.
What do you and we're wrapping up now, so I would like your honesty in this question. What are you reading these days?
Reading? I just finished reading American Sniper, the book about the movie.
I've got to call you out on this, Tim. I watched a video of you from July, and in the video they said, "What are you reading?" And you said, "I'm reading American Sniper now." So, has it really taken you this long to read?
My brother is an English teacher.
Yes.
And when I told him I finally first read a book, he was proud of me.
So you want everybody to be proud of you? That's what you're saying. Everybody be proud. I read a book.
No, but I ended up like putting the book down and like leaving it for a while, and then we did a lot of traveling recently, so I was able to pick the book back up again and finally actually finish it.
Is the book the third option? So first option is tablet, battery dies because we're Vancouver, so every flight is a long flight unless it's another Cascadia match. Once that dies, we go to the phone. When that dies, magazine, and then you go, all right, I guess I'll bust this book out and start reading it again.
I think first option is always an app on the flight, and then second option the second option is if I was lucky enough to download a movie on my laptop, and then the third option was my book.
I like how you say "lucky enough" as if it was some act by a foreign power. I was lucky enough. No, you've decided. So you're the guy who, when you get to the airport, you go, "Oh man, I didn't download a movie."
If the Wi-Fi cooperates, or if I remember to do it the night before, then, I mean, I'll have a movie on my laptop.
Yeah, you're right about that, because whenever I take a flight, I don't think about it until about 15 minutes before I leave my house. And you know it doesn't – you can't download a full movie in that amount of time. And then it's like halfway downloaded before you leave your Wi-Fi.
Yeah, exactly. And then the airport Wi-Fi is never good enough to download a movie.
Yeah, that's like 1% every 5 minutes. That's torture is what it is. All right. So is there another book on the menu, or are we just we read our book? Brother's happy. I'm done.
I don't have another book right now, but I was when I was walking around the airport the other day, I was actually going to pick up The Martian,
okay.
try to read that book. But that's a book that I want to read before I see the movie. So I'm actually going to have to buy that book pretty soon before that movie comes out.
Yeah.
It's available for me to watch.
Yeah, and that's the other thing I noticed about your when you had that conversation was you like to see you like to read the book before the movie, and this one you saw the movie and decided to go read the book. But yeah, if you want to see The Martian, you got to get on the book.
Yeah, so I think that's my next book of choice because I think I like books with movies just because it's easier for me to read about them and kind of know about them.
Well, and also I feel like you're the kind of guy who also likes to tell everybody what was different from the movie or from the book and kind of lord it over everybody who didn't read the book.
Yes. I wouldn't mind doing that. Like, no, I'm not that picky and I'm not that, I don't like to tell people that much kind of information. Like the book American Sniper was obviously much different than the movie.
Yes.
But I mean, I think it was just cool. I think that kind of a book and that kind of a story is something that I really wanted to get to know more about.
Absolutely.
So that's the reason why I first picked up that book. And then obviously The Martian is something that I think is a cool idea and a cool story as well. So I want to be able to read that book before I get to see that movie.
I recently read Lone Survivor. So that might be another one you might want to put on your list as well, because that's similar to the American Sniper story. And then you can be the guy that goes, you know, in the book, and everybody rolls their eyes and goes, oh, Tim, settle down. Tim, now that you are on my radar, I'm going to be watching you very, very closely, not least of which because 26 is my favorite number, and so I'm really happy that there's a 26 in the league that is really good, and I appreciate the time that you have spent with us. Good luck this weekend against Portland and the rest of the MLS Cup playoffs.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate coming on here.
Show information, go to pitchpass.com.